Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Chumash Parsha series on OU Torah. My name is Michael Gutman. This week we'll be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parsha's Vayigash. And I want to begin with Rav Hirsch's comments on Perek Mem Hei Pasuk Yud Aleph, where Rav Hirsch is not really commenting on a specific Pasuk, but is rather giving his overview of the story of Mechiras Yosef as it comes to a close. And Rav Hirsch just touches on a few different points about the story. He begins by saying that, pointing out how this story really shows Hashem's hashgacha in the world, and shows how the entire chain of events clearly is the work of Hashem, and this becomes clear to the brothers as soon as Yosef reveals himself to them, and to us as readers of Chumash, we see through this story, clear proof that Hashem runs the world, and that everything that happens, happens for a reason. Rav Hirsch cites a pasuk in Mishlei, which says in Perek Chaf Vav pasuk Yud, which says Rav Mecholel Kol V'Socher Ksil V'Socher Ovrim, that the Great One, the Rav, referring to Hashem, creates everything and hires fools and hires transgressors, meaning that Hashem makes everything happen, and sometimes uses fools in his service and transgressors in his service who unwittingly serve to bring about the purpose of Hashem. And even Ovrim, even those who do Averos, even those who sin, can sometimes serve the purposes of Hashem, as the brothers did here when they sold Yosef into slavery. They were absolutely wrong, but through their wrongdoing, they brought about Hashem's goal of Golus Mitzrayim, and the result in Avdus, and then eventually Yetzias Mitzrayim. But all this came from their error, and their wrongful sale of Yosef to Mitzrayim. And so Rav Hirsch says that as we read this story, and we come to the end, we can clearly trace back the thread of the story and see how all the events were guided by the hand of Hashem. And this is a lesson to us because often in life, we don't see the hand of Hashem in what happens to us. We know that Hashem guides everything. We believe that Hashem is guiding all the events in our lives, but sometimes it's hard for us to understand, especially because we can't see where it's going. We can't understand what the eventual goal is. So this story in Chumash is meant to bolster our emunah in Hashem and understand that no matter what happens to us in life, just as in this story we see clearly in hindsight how everything worked out for a purpose in a very specific way, so too in our lives we can extrapolate from this story and feel confident that Hashem is looking after us and taking care of us and ensuring that everything happens for a reason. Then Rav Hirsch goes on to talk about the idea of why Golus Mitzrayim was necessary. And Rav Hirsch says that the Hashem had originated very early on, from the Bris Bein HaBesarim to Avram Avinu, had promised that this would happen, had foretold that they would go to Mitzrayim where they would be enslaved, and from where they would be redeemed and become a nation after a number of generations. Why was this necessary? Rav Hirsch says that in Eretz Kanaan, had Yaakov and his family remained there, they would not have become a nation. He says that if they were, they would eventually, as the family grew, would merge together with the surrounding population and would not be able to retain a distinct identity in Eretz Kanaan. Instead, it was in order to make sure that they developed a national identity as they grew into a nation, as the family increased in numbers, that it was important for them to be isolated in the middle of a nation whose morals and values were completely antithetical to the values that they had learned from the Avos, and the nation that was completely the opposite of Yaakov and his family was Mitzrayim. A nation of immorality, a nation of Avodah Zarah, a nation where all their values were completely opposite to theirs. And so it was important that they be isolated among the Mitzrim, in their own little corner of Mitzrayim, to, in a way, to promote their own cohesion, their self-identity, and their nationhood among themselves, to bring them to form a nation in a place where there would be no desire to go outside, where there would be no desire to mingle with the local people. And that place was Mitzrayim. And Rav Hirsch compares this to the ghettos in Europe in the Middle Ages. And Rav Hirsch, of course, lived during the time of the Emancipation, when the walls of the ghettos came down, and Rav Hirsch had to really train. Well, Rav Hirsch's view was that he had to bring Torah and the Torah nation into a new era, an era where the barriers of the ghettos were no longer there, and where he had to show people a way to be good Jews while still interacting with society. And this was a new situation for the Jewish people in the 19th century, when Rav Hirsch was at his apex. And Rav Hirsch, interestingly enough, though, you would think that Rav Hirsch, who extolled the values of emancipation and Torah Derech Eretz and interaction with society and the Jew as a role model to the nations of the world, you would think that Rav Hirsch saw that as the ideal, which he did, but he still understood the value of the ghettos. And Rav Hirsch writes here in this, and I'll read you what he writes. Rav Hirsch writes that similarly, the fanaticism that gave rise to the ghettos was an instrument in the hands of God to keep us far from the sinful culture of the Middle Ages, so that we should cultivate the happiness of family life and the spirit of family and community within our own closed circle. So Rav Hirsch understood that the ghettos had their function for the hundreds of years during which the Jews were kept in them. And that in the Middle Ages, which were full of barbaric leaders and nations who could not understand Torah values, it was better for the Jews to remain behind walls, to remain secluded and isolated, where they could work on themselves, strengthen their own identity, strengthen their own values. And that was important then. Rav Hirsch writes about this as well in the 19 letters, in the 16th letter, which is on the subject of emancipation, where his correspondent has decided that emancipation must not be desirable because it would be a way in which the Jewish identity would be destroyed because of their interactions and their assimilation with society. And Rav Hirsch addresses why emancipation is a valuable development in world history and why it's important. Rav Hirsch writes here, and I wanted to read you a quote from what he writes in the 16th letter here, where he explains why it was important for the Jewish people to be in ghettos throughout the Middle Ages. He writes here, and I'll quote to you. He writes, "Just visualize the sons of Yisrael dwelling in freedom amid other nations, striving to attain their ideals. Picture every son of Yisrael a respected, influential model of righteousness and love, spreading not Judaism, because this is forbidden, but pure humanitarianism. What a mighty impetus to the education of mankind. What a source of light and strength this could have been in the benighted period of the Middle Ages, if this kind of gullus had not been precluded by Yisrael's sinfulness and the nation's insane fanaticism. How impressive it would have been in the midst of a human race pursuing and indeed often benightedly worshipping violence, wealth, and gratification of the senses, if there had quietly lived in open view men who regarded possessions and enjoyment only as the means to practice justice and love toward all, men whose minds, imbued with truth and wisdom of the Torah, maintained only sensible, truly human views, and who perpetuated these for themselves and others by expressing them in living symbolic actions. It would appear, however, that a harsh and oppressive gullus had to come first, in order to train Yisrael to live under milder gullus conditions. Only after gullus is understood and accepted as it should be, when even in a time of suffering, God and the Torah are seen as the sole task in life, when material abundance is sought only as a means and when God is served even in misery, only then is Yisrael perhaps ready for the even greater test of a life of ease and good fortune while it is dispersed in Golos. So we see here how Rav Hirsch viewed the value of the ghettos and how and the values of emancipation, each in their own time, in the right place, and when Klal Yisrael is ready for it. And Hirsch makes it quite clear that yes, it would be wonderful in an idyllic world where during the Middle Ages the barbarism that was promoted by most of the nations of the world would have been tempered by the example, the role model of the Jewish people. But he writes that that was impossible because the Jewish people were not ready for it and the nations of the world were not ready for it. To have a world in which Jews are members of society, said living and teaching the nations of the world by example what it means to live a moral life, what it means to live a life of value, that is only worthwhile when the Jews are ready to serve as that role model and when the nations of the world are ready to accept that, are ready to hear it and be receptive to such a message. And in the Middle Ages, writes Rav Hirsch, that was absolutely not the case. So Rav Hirsch says that it was necessary for the Jews to live a difficult life and to still to focus on themselves and build themselves up for a while, and to the point where they were ready for the next test. And he says emancipation is a nisayon. It is the next test that Hashem has set for Klal Yisrael once they are ready to move up to the next level. And he makes it clear that emancipation is only worthwhile and a blessing if the Jews are able to live appropriately while being emancipated and serve as role models for nations. And I encourage the listener to read through that 16th letter in its entirety to get the full context of what I read to you before. But he first makes it clear that emancipation is valuable when used correctly, if we are ready for it and if the nations are ready for it. And it's a responsibility for the Jewish people. And it's not something to be taken lightly. So here too as well, in the context of Golos Mitzrayim and the Shibud, Rav Hirsch says that the Jewish people, the Yaakov and his family, were not ready to be role models to the world yet as a nation. They didn't have that identity. They didn't have that internal strength to serve in that role at this point. And they needed to go to Mitzrayim and live a life of Golos and live a life of difficulty and a life in isolation where they could focus on refining themselves so that when they came out of the Golos Mitzrayim, when they eventually came to Eretz Yisrael, they were when they were emancipated themselves from their ghettos of Goshen, of Golos Mitzrayim, they were then ready to be the Or LaGoyim that they are meant to be. And this is the perspective that Rav Hirsch has on the purpose of going down to Mitzrayim and its relevance to us even today. In his time, living through emancipation, and even in our time when we are not that far away from it, when it's only recent history that our ancestors had to live in ghettos throughout Europe. And we should understand the purpose of that emancipation serves in the unfolding of world history and our responsibilities because of that. So Rav Hirsch says, this is why Yosef constantly stresses to his brothers that all this is Hashem's doing. Yosef writes, Yosef says to his brother, he says, "Vayishlocheni Elokim lifneichem," Hashem sent me ahead of you. And then again he says, "V'ata lo atem shlaftem osiheinu ki Elokim," you didn't send me here, Hashem sent me here. And he stresses to them that this is all Hashem's doing, this is all for a purpose, this is all because Hashem wants him to have, in a sense, infiltrated the government, really have become close to Paro and have Paro's ear. And this way he was able to set up the land in a way that was a place where the Jews would feel comfortable in the sense that they got their own land And he was able, as we see later on in the parsha, to relocate all the Egyptians throughout the land from one area to another, so that they themselves were not natives. So that when the Jews came as strangers in the land, the Egyptians could not oppress the Jews as strangers, because the Jews could say that the Egyptians themselves were strangers in their neighborhood because they had not come from that part of Egypt themselves. And so it really put them on equal footing, enabling them to settle in a way that they would not have been able to had they not had Yosef there to take care of them. And our first writer says a similar historic development took place in Europe, that the nations of Europe are really migrants from Asia, and how all the migration of the nations in the beginning of the Middle Ages, or even earlier than that, where there were people who came from across from Asia into Europe, and that's where all the Germanic peoples descended from. And so even if they would seek to treat the Jews as foreigners, the Jews could turn to Europeans, that they themselves were not there, and their ancestors were not natives of Europe. They had come from elsewhere. And it was a similar arrangement thousands of years later in a different galus. And Rav Hirsch makes one final point in his summary of the story of Mechiras Yosef and its result as in the Jews' descent to Mitzrayim. He points out that there's a commonality between the first Galus Mitzrayim here, and the final Galus, with the Churban Bayis Sheni and Galus Edom, in that both resulted from jealousy and sinas chinam. Just as Chazal tell us that the second Mitzvah was destroyed because of sinas chinam, we see here that the first exile was because the Yosef's brothers hated him and were jealous of him, and they ended up selling him, and that led them to end up in Egypt. And Rav Hirsch writes, with his concluding sentence is, "The crucible of exile, through the suffering of oppression, refined and purified all segments of our people, developing in them a sense of equality and brotherhood." And Rav Hirsch views a sense of equality with one another, which really comes about when we are all suffering equally in Galus, and Rav Hirsch sees that as one of the primary goals of a Galus. And it's a lesson to us that we too must work on Sinas Chinam, which has been the cause of Galus in Klal Yisrael from here in Sefer Bereishis to our times today, and understand how Galus is supposed to help us overcome the challenges of Sinas Chinam, overcome the temptation to not get along with one another, and instead feel a sense of equality among all Jewish people and a sense of ahava for one another. And that's meant to be fostered by an existence in Galus. When Yaakov does go down to Mitzrayim, as we read in the beginning of Perek Mem Vav, we read an interesting pasuk, an interesting expression in pasuk Hey, when Yaakov begins his journey. Pasuk says, "Vayakom Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva." Yaakov got up from Be'er Sheva. "Vayisu v'nei Yisrael es Yaakov avihem," and the sons of Yisrael lifted Yaakov their father. And it's interesting, and we touched on this a little bit last week in the dynamic between the two names of Yaakov, the name Yaakov and the name Yisrael. And we talked last week about a change in names in the middle of the narrative in last week's parasha. But here we see a change in name right in the middle of a pasuk, where the very same action is described with both names, where "Vayis'u v'nei Yisrael es Yaakov avihem." The sons of Yisrael are carrying their father Yaakov. The very same phrase contains both names. And Rav Hirsch questions, what's the reason for that? And so to answer that, we have to look back at Rav Hirsch's comments to the beginning of the Perek and see how Yaakov's attitude at the outset of his journey and then what changes shortly thereafter. So we read in the beginning of the Perek, "Vayisa Yisrael v'cho asher lo v'yavo be'er hashava," that Yisrael traveled with all that, and all that was his, they came to Be'er Sheva, Yizbach Zvachim Leilokei Aviv Yitzchak, and he brought offerings, sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak. And Hirsch notes here that he's called Yisrael, because to Yaakov, this is now the greatest point in his life. His life has been full of suffering and difficulty. There's been trouble from Esav, and there's been trouble from Lavan, and then Yosef was taken away from him, one sorrow after the next. But now he sees how everything is being resolved. Yosef is alive. She's going to him in Mitzrayim. Yosef is going to take care of him. Everything is going to be good. This is from here on out. The suffering is over. This is now he's in his golden years. He's going to live out his life in Mitzrayim, and so he's happy. He's Yisrael. He feels that he's finally passed all his tests, and he's moving past that, and this is moving to the final stage in his life. And that's why by Yizbach Zvachim, his karbonos are called Zvachim, which we never find by any of the other avos. We have not found to this point in Sefer Bereishis anybody who brings Zvachim. Noach brought Olos, Avraham, Yitzchak brought Olos. Here, Yaakov brings Zvachim. And Zvachim are another word for Shlamim. And Shlamim differs from an Ola, because a shlamim is eaten, the meat is eaten after bringing on the Mizbeach. And so it's not just that everything is sacrificed to Hashem, but that the kedusha of the karbon belongs in the home as well, and the family eats the meat after bringing the karbon. And so it's an expression of Hashem, feeling Hashem's presence and Hashem's guidance in one's life. That's the idea of a karbon shlamim. And the idea that even the eating and drinking the eating the carbon and the drinking that goes with the meal and the festive nature of bringing the carbon, that in itself can also be a service of Hashem. And our first explains that's why a nachri cannot bring a carbon shlamim, only olos, because a non-Jew cannot understand the concept of how even mundane activities, even eating and celebrations, can be a service of Hashem. But we know that we can serve Hashem in everything that we do. And that's the expression of a shlamim. And so Yaakov, of course, feels Hashem's guiding presence in his life at this point. And he is so happy, and he feels complete, shalim, which is the root of the word shlamim. And so he brings Zivachim at this point, not Olos. And this pasuk shows us Yaakov's attitude and how he's approaching his trip to Mitzrayim. And he's approaching it in a state of joy. But that all changes very quickly, because the next pasuk Beis, we see the shift in names happen. Vayomer Elokim li Yisrael b'maros halayla, that Hashem says to Yisrael in a night vision. Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov. He calls out to Yaakov with the name Yaakov. Vayomer Hineni. He says, here I am. And Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer, Hashem says, Anochi Hokel, Okeo Vicha, I am the God of your fathers. Al Tiram Eredam Mitzrayim. Don't fear. Don't be afraid of descending to Egypt. Ki L'goy Gadol Asim Choshem. I will make you a great nation there. So, verse says, what is Yaakov afraid of that Hashem has to say, Al Tira? We've seen Yaakov is in a joyous mood. And all of a sudden, Hashem is telling him, don't be afraid. Well, what was he afraid of? So the fear is clearly a result of what comes in the middle in Pasuk Beis, where Hashem appears to him, b'maros halayla. Hashem appears to him in a night vision. And a night vision conveys a sense of seriousness not necessarily a happy situation. Night is a time of fear. And Hashem addresses him by the name Yaakov, not by the name Yisrael. And this indicates to Yaakov that not all is well, that maybe his joy is a little bit presumptuous, and he understands all of a sudden that this trip to Mitzrayim is not going to be all fun and games. It's not going to be necessarily a happy experience. And he responds, "Dayomer Hineni," and his response is, "Here I am," meaning he presents himself as ready to hear what Hashem has to say. He's ready to confront whatever will happen to him in his life. He's ready to serve Hashem in whatever circumstances he has to face. And that's why Hashem says to him, Al Tira, you don't have to be afraid. I'm going to take care of your nation. Yes, it will not be all wonderful, but I'm going to make you, there will be, the results will be happy. That I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to turn your family to a great nation. I will accompany you. Yosef will be with you. Eventually, later on, years to come, after Yaakov is gone, he knows that his children will suffer in Mitzrayim. But he also knows that, and that really tempers his joy. And so in Pasuk Hey we read, Vayakam Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov rises up from Be'er Sheva. In Pasuk Aleph, we read Vayisa Yisrael, that Yisrael traveled. Now he's picking himself up. He has to lift himself up, almost recover from the news he received from Hashem at night. And he lifts himself up, and we really now sense the onus al pi hadibur, how Yaakov is no longer excited and running down to Mitzrayim, ready to meet Yosef with joy. But now he is in a way resigned to his fate, and he's picking himself up, and he's saying, I'm onus al pi hadibur, I have to go. Here we go. But we read, Vayis'u v'nei Yisrael as Yaakov avihem. His children are still b'nei Yisrael, even though they are carrying Yaakov avihem. And now we understand the difference. Yaakov's sons did not get the night vision. They did not fully appreciate where this galus was going to lead them. They too were in a state of joy, feeling that Yosef was in Mitzrayim, he had forgiven them, he's going to take care of them, he's going to get them through this famine, they're going to have a place to live, everything is all wonderful, they're reuniting their family, they are B'nai Yisrael, but Yaakov is still Yaakov Avihem. Because even as he is being taken down to Mitzrayim, even as he is traveling there, but he is sobered by the understanding of what this galus is really going to be, and by his feelings of seriousness about what this galus will bring to his family in the years to come. So that's the distinction between Vayisu v'nei Yisrael as Yaakov avihem. And so in explaining these psukim, we see how Rav Hirsch picks up in the finer points, in a word here, an expression there, to really show us the feelings of Yaakov Avinu and how his mood changes from the beginning, from Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Hey, when he understands what the galus will be, and that this trip to Mitzrayim is not just a trip to live out the famine, but is really going to be a galus. And we can see that again in the change of names in the middle of the story back and forth, and by the different expressions describing Yaakov Avinu's travels. When Yaakov arrives in Mitzrayim, he is presented to Paro by his son Yosef. Now, Rav Hirsch points out that for Paro, as a head of state, to spend time with Yaakov and to ask him a question about his life experience really shows that Yaakov has made a great impression on Paro just by standing in front of him. Because normally, heads of state have time, when they're meeting with people, they have a brief audience where they ask some formal questions, some polite little inquiries. But here, Paro asks really a loaded question. And he says, Kamo yimei shenei chayecha. What are the days of, how many are the days of the years of your life? This is not what he asked the Shvatim. The Shvatim, we saw earlier, Paro asked him, Mama Seichem, what do you do for a living? Right? So that's a nice, polite question when you meet somebody for the first time. What do you do for a living? Very nice. Your shepherds, goodbye. Nice to meet you. Pleasure seeing you. You have a wonderful brother who's helped me a lot. That's very nice. And that's the end of their audience with Paro. But Paro sees Yaakov, and all of a sudden, he's struck by Yaakov that he asks him about the days of the years of his life. What does this question mean? What are the days of the years of the life? So we touched on this also in Parashas Chayei Sarah when we talked about Avraham Avinu being a ba bayomim. And we talked about the value of every single day. And here the question is, what are the days, how many are the days of the years of your life? And Rav Hirsch writes that most people count years. By that certain number of years have gone by, they're a certain number of years old, and the value lies in how they spend their years, and they only see a certain, you know, transition taking place over years, and they see the value in a group, a large block of time. But Rav Hirsch writes that only a few people understand the value of each day, and see each day as a valuable piece of time to itself, with its own tasks and its own special mission. And Rav Hirsch writes that a true human being does not live years, but lives days. And he reverse references Perek Tzadi in Tehillim, which is Tefillah L'Moshe, Ish HaElokim, where it talks about the passage of time. And Rav Hirsch writes how in Tehillim there, it says, Ki Elef Shnei Be'enecha Kiyom Esmol, V'Ashmur Balala, that 1,000 years can seem like a day. A person doesn't value his time, centuries can go by, and not much can be accomplished. But our goal, what we ask Hashem, is as the pasuk there in Tehillim says, "Limnosi amenu kein hoda," that we ask Hashem to teach us to count our days, "V'novi leva'al chachma," and then we will be able to bring home a heart full of wisdom. If we understand how to count our days, if we learn to see the value in every single moment, as Rav Hirsch writes in his Perush on Tehillim, if we learn to see the value in every, not just every day, but every moment, every minute of every day, and we understand that we can utilize every waking moment to serve Hashem. Rav Hirsch writes, and I'm quoting from the Perush in Tehillim, and Perek Tzadi, Pasuk Yud Beis, Rav Hirsch writes, "Teach us limnos yomenu, how to number our days, how to properly seek that bliss which we are capable of acquiring during the 24 times 60 times 60 seconds of each day." Meaning 24 hours times 60 minutes times 60 seconds. All those, every second. Going back to the commentary. "Let us derive this knowledge from the awareness that all else is vain, a fact which has been amply demonstrated for us by millennia of past history. Once we have learned this, then v'novi levav chachma." So Rav Hirsch writes that we must spend all our time in a way that will bring value to us and not waste it. Time is a precious resource, and we want to be able to say at the end of our time that we have used every day that has been given to us. And so Paro, who has seen Yaakov, and Yaakov has made an impression on him, he wonders how many days has he lived throughout the years of his life. How many days has he utilized? He clearly thinks the answer will be a lot, because he is impressed by just Yaakov's presence. But Yaakov's answer is probably not what Paro expected. Because Yaakov answers, let's read the pasuk test. Vayom Yaakov al Paro. Yaakov says to Paro, Yimei shenei megurai shloshim u'mas shana. The days of the years of my sojourning have been 130 years. Me'at v'ra'im hayu yimei shnei chayai. Few and bitter and evil have been the days of the years of my life. V'lo hisigu es yimei shnei chayai avosai b'yimei megureihem. And they did not reach the days of the lives of my fathers in the year, their days of sojourning. So we see how Yaakov here differentiates between Megurai and Chayai. And Yaakov says, my sojourning, my physical life, I'm 130 years old. But the Yimei Shnei Chayai, the days that I can call life, the days where I was able to serve Hashem in joy, are few and far between, and not many. And he says that they were that my father is Avram and Yitzchak, they lived more, Rav Hirsch writes, to explain Yaakov is saying. That Rav Hirsch writes, the substance of my life cannot be compared with the substance of the lives of my fathers. They lived more. Every day of their sojourn here on earth was living, and they were privileged to carry out their life's mission under joyful conditions. But Rav Hirsch adds, this is not a complaint about the shortness of his life, but modesty in looking back at the moral worth of the life he experienced. Yaakov looked back modestly on his life and says that the days that he utilized were few and far between because of the bitterness that he experienced throughout his life. And perhaps that was not the case. But what we see from this exchange between Paro and Yaakov is the value of days within the context of years of our life. And that it is not years that are necessarily important, but every single day should not be underestimated. And every single day contains a tremendous potential for growth and for accomplishment and for bringing ourselves closer to Hashem and for serving Him in whatever circumstances we see, we have in our lives. But every moment can be utilized to serve Hashem. And not a moment of that should be wasted. Limnos yomeinu kein hoda. That should be our goal in life. And then v'navil al chachma. And then when we truly become chachamim, we will truly have wisdom, understanding of what life is all about, understanding of what is expected of us, and understanding of what we can and are meant to accomplish in our time here in this world.